And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
I thought Dreamtime was great. I mean, that's a very controversial statement. And look, we're a very non-political podcast, but as well as sort of everything about Dreamtime itself, which I think.
Wonderful pre-match.
Wonderful pre-match. I think the pre-match, particularly our side of the pre-match, is just getting better and better. And Essendon's not keeping up off the field as well. But I also took some satisfaction that our winning streak against Essendon is now into its fourth different Prime Minister.
Nice start.
But aside from that, it is, I don't know, it's somehow we've had a comfortable win where, you know, Tom Lynch has had the most inept goal-kicking performance imaginable, literally 4 points from five shots at goal, the Robbie Tarrant goal that wasn't, and a few others.
Bolton.
We played... Bolton?
Yeah,
oh, yeah, Bolton as well. And the Hobbs, inexplicable Hobbs free kick. So, yeah, expected score was over, result was over 50 points. We played the whole last quarter. One man down on the bench. Was it really plucky?
By Essendon?
Yeah. Because there was a lot of talk during the game about, you know, them showing the fight. And, yeah, certainly they did a lot of jumper pulling, which would have made themselves feel better about themselves. But did they achieve anything?
Look, I know the tone you're trying to set is condescending, but and which I fully appreciate. But I will say that when Hobbs got the before-mentioned free kick for the high tackle from Grimes, the sling tackle from Grimes, and then celebrated like he just sort of bench-pressed Nankervis in a marking contest. And
or had hit the front in a preliminary final.
Look, I get, and especially he's a first-year player who, you know, frankly, we both like pre-draft, but, like, Jesus Christ, mate, get some context, you know, be happy, don't be this sort of, yeah, like double flex fist pump. It was, there were times when they all got around Tom Lynch when there was no one else there and they all gave him a push, like Tom Lynch's, you know, I'm sure Tom Lynch was devastated by having a couple of 85 kilo Essendon future builders pushing him around on the field. Like, there was so much plastic tough guy stuff. Now, look, I get it where it came from because they had less than 30 tackles the week before, so there was sort of an overcompensation to that, and they got more tackles this week. Good for them. They looked like a normal bad team instead of a pathetically bad team. But yeah, the sort of the plastic tough guy stuff. I think it was Parker who said this. He said this: the hardest thing in football is to keep running in the fourth quarter when you're exhausted. It's not the not going back with a fight, not all those other things. That's true. And in the fourth quarter, look, they had a couple of injuries too, but we had two absolutely crucial players down and they didn't fly a shot. Like they never, their comeback was non-existent.
Yeah, literally. Effectively. Literally the Coleman medalist on the bench. Yeah. I mean, it is like,
you know, it's a huge downgrade from Lambert to Arts and yet still nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can understand the segment of Essendon supporters who, you know, 18 years into their current rebuild, why they aren't a bit closer to the team that's currently eighth on the ladder. Fair question.
Fair question, Dean. You know, but look, I think the current CEO and the recruiting agent have done some really good work. You know, I think they probably need another 5 years to really implement their vision.
Hmm. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, it was remarkable. Like, I thought the statement of where it's gone wrong for Essendon was Josh Gibkiss, top 10 draft pick, playing on another top 10 draft pick defender in Aaron Francis, except that Aaron Francis is playing as a forward and looked completely all at sea. And his career's going nowhere.
Whereas Gibkiss looked incredibly defensively sound.
Oh.
Extremely promising.
He miscued on the one wood a couple of times. But I actually didn't mind because he was so outrageously confident that he could hit someone 50 meters away with a pass. Like, you know, I'll forgive that level of ambition because I think he does have the skill to pull it off, and he's just got to, you know, tighten things up a bit. But yeah, no, look, it was a satisfying win.
Absolutely. And look, I mean, it's now in a block of four, right, where we've beaten every team we need to beat. And none of those games were particularly close or through, you know, there were brief moments of excitement in, you know, I guess the Hawthorn game in junk time suddenly got a little bit closer. But essentially all of them were fairly comfortable statistical wins and the teams we needed to beat. You know, this week will be a really interesting test, but the sort of, yes, it's true that we haven't beaten anyone good, but it's also true that the mark of, statistically over the long term, the mark of good teams is not that they that everything goes perfect for them every week, but the actual mark of good teams is they consistently comfortably beat bad teams, and that's what we've done 4 weeks in a row. So we are rightfully not in the top four premiership favourites at the moment, but we are at least highly competitive, and this week will be a big tell. But Nick, there's a couple of things I want to talk about back this week that I've been thinking about in regards to the clearances. But, you know, once again, Nick, by a lot of the measures, Nank was our best player.
Yeah.
Including the coaches' votes. He got 9 coaches' votes. I think Baker was best on ground in the AFL ratings.
I thought he was best on ground in the coaches' votes too. I did notice nobody got 10 on the coaches' votes, but both coaches had Nank, Baker, and Prestia as our three best players, which I thought that was pretty right. I mean, Nank. Next, even in Mark of the Week calculations this week for that fantastic grab going back with a fly. But yeah, it was, you know, we talked about Scott Draper's a big boy. But yeah, no, Nank yet again was relentless.
Yeah, I mean, Draper's not going to confuse anyone with Adam Goods for his ability around the ground. But once again, we dominated in rucks. Once again, that sort of led to a respectable performance in the clearance, which we just lost. But the important thing was we didn't get beaten out of the centre square, because that's what costs us games, is when we get badly beaten, because we generally win the turnover, scoring from turnover battle. Soldo was highly efficient in the rucks, with less opportunity, had more tap outs and more hit outs to advantage, but obviously Nank was dominant round the ground. But yeah, look, this now ends a 4 week segment where we have comfortably won the rucks, which is very unusual.
As part of our taking care of business, we have certainly taken care of business in the ruck.
I suspect that's since probably peak Ivy days, there hasn't been. I need to go back and register this, but it's probably the best 4 week stretch we've had in a very, very long time. Like, well pre 2017.
Yeah.
Now, I know it doesn't appear like that, but now, as we've discussed many times,
I'm trying to think, and I am actually drawing a blank. Quick to AFL tables.
I was wrong. I must have got confused with the week before. You're quite right. Baker was 9, Prestia was 8, and Toby Nankervis was 7. So that's sort of it's a very, very top heavy lead. But normally, as you sort of point out, there's a greater distribution of votes. But yeah, the top three were by far the both coaches agreed on the top three.
Yeah, played really well. I think, look, he only had one goal for the game, but I think, you know, the fill-in full forward, Ivan Soldo, like, he looks like he's going to take marks up there. And thinking about how we cover for Tom Lynch this week, is he the obvious replacement in the absence of a more obvious replacement?
The Nankdo combination. Look, Nick, there's sort of a thing in basketball where there are some guys, there are good stats, bad teams guys who waste a lot of opportunities that they're given. You know, they score a lot of points, but they take a lot of shots. And when you're taking a shot, it means that someone else is not taking a shot. So it has an effect if you're inefficient. I was thinking, like, this was an all-time bad Tom Lynch game, like, as well recognized that he's had a wonderful season. This is not bagging Tom Lynch, it's just pointing out he had a shocker of a night. Culminated in the done hamstring. But when Tom Lynch is getting a lot of supply and missing all those shots, it's not just bad. Like, it's worse than nothing, because a replacement level player might at least have brought that ball to the ground, and someone else might get a snap that might kick the goal. Which, again, this is not a systemic thing. This is just in Tom Lynch's uniquely bad night. I think Soldo had one genuine inside 50 target for the game and kicked one goal from it. So you can't blame the efficiency. Whether it's going to stand up, I don't know. But the fact he clunked it was good mark and he kicked it, you know, at least there's an efficiency there. And now he was playing on the other ruckman when he did it. So it's not like he had a super fast key back on his hammer, but he took the mark. He's doing something. So is that enough to keep us going for what might only be 2 weeks, because Lynch's hamstring, one game, 2 weeks in effect. Like it's worth a try. And so it's not 2017 when Jack and the Midgets, because in 2017 we were second rucking Sean Grigg famously, so you know there was no was no backup option. So actually we can still do two tours and we can still sort of bomb it down long the line. But the challenge is for Soldo is whether he can do that for longer if he's getting a bit more supply, because at the moment he's efficient from limited opportunities. But it'll be really interesting to see whether he can do it in Sydney, where he will probably get more football kicked at him. Nick, surprisingly enough, I probably spent too long analysing Soldo, which I know is very unlikely.
Well, yes, and the Ivan Soldo is key forward. You're always weighing it up against the next best alternative, which, in the absence of Noah Bolter, is unfortunately Samson Ryan, who's been playing almost exclusively as a ruck all year in the VFL. So, yeah,
it's hard to imagine. Like, you're still exchanging first ruck for first ruck, right? Like, it's not a very, you know, it's a bit Spider-Man meme-y.
Yeah, well, and Sydney have two genuine rucks as well, and not in the pretty competent ones as well. So yeah. Anyway, we should talk about non ruckman.
I'll go get myself a coffee.
Okay.
I'm joking.
I'm slightly annoyed with myself that I haven't had the chance to fact check the. When Dimmer said that Dion Prestia would have won several more best and fairests if he hadn't missed games, I think he's true for 1 year, maybe not for the others. But
it's absolutely not true. Like he actually, I mean, maybe had he been fully fit, and like he played some really crap football in 2017. He just had a good final season, so maybe you maybe also.
There's some decidedly lukewarm podcasts from us on the Dion Prestia experience.
And the other thing, Prestia has become our predominant. Dusty used to play, Dusty's clearances are down, Shedder's clearances are down. Prestia has become relatively our predominant clearance player, but he wasn't always the dominant. I mean, he's always been incredibly important, as much discussed, but I think that's sort of, you know, it might be, there's some truth to what Dimas said, but I think there is some recency bias to that about how Shedder is by now by far our most effective inside mid, but it hasn't always been that case.
Prestia. Yeah.
Prestia, what did I say?
Yeah. Shedder.
Shedder. Oh, my apologies. Yeah. But
Who was better? I thought. Prestia, 36 disposals, covered. He just covered the ground. Like, there was a relentless work rate to his performance that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, look, you know, I said the theory before about if 12 goes down, we're all stuffed, about the what's up plan B with Prestia. And I mean, he's ludicrously important. Like, it is, and we're not really sort of, I mean, I'll talk about more about selection, but yeah, it's really hard. It does feel that as Prestia's various leg elements go, there goes Richmond.
Yeah, definitely so. Thankfully, in a non-Tom Lynch world, he's going out at a time when Jack is absolutely in good form, feeling good about his body, kicking goals. Like, if we're going to ask Jack for a vintage performance, he seems pretty well placed to deliver.
Yeah, you couldn't. I mean, there's obviously Tom Lynch is still always taking Alpha Defender A, but yeah, he's in superb. So it'll be a challenge for him next week, but he is in, couldn't agree more. He's in just the first quarter. He was keeping us, keeping us in the game is an exaggeration, but he was definitely the one who was kicking, who was by far our most effective forward. He's just, I couldn't agree more. He's in amazing form, and we're just so lucky that, that, and I know it's not unheard of. Tom Hawkins is playing great football and is older than Jack, but to get good key position play at this age is something to never be forgotten, to that we shouldn't take it for granted. Well, we've lost Nick.
There's some extremely good players who've really started to hit the wall in their career at this stage. So yeah, we appreciate him every week. I did think Lambert on the replay, Lambert was labouring with his running, although he was always in the right position, so that even if he was struggling a bit, he was still impacting. But yeah, I hope we can get him back up again for the second half of the season.
Yeah, I remember once with being told sort of by a footy doctor that the hips are the worst possible injury. You can fix a lot of other things, but hips are, a degenerative hip is just an absolute bugger of an injury. And, you know, Dimmer talking about Lambert afterwards was, Jesus, we expected him to play one game and he got four. God. It's obviously, it's like, sorry to repeat this refrain, but, every Lambert game we should appreciate. And, you know, if I was to do an over-under now, I'd suspect we'd get more games out of Jack going forward than we do Lambert for the rest of his career.
I think that's reasonable. I thought Robbie Tarrant's best game for Richmond.
I don't think that's controversial at all.
That's probably even milder than it deserves to be. I thought he was genuinely good.
Yeah, absolutely. And for the first time, we saw some of his long kicking. There might have been one or two, but in previous games. But there were three or four kicks from, and not just the kick for goal, which was obviously the disallowed goal. But there were multiple kicks that were high quality, I thought, during the game. Like, I went, that's kind of what we talked about when we got him. That you know, the evidence was he was a really good field kick, and we got to see a bit of it. So good on him. He still doesn't. He struggles a bit with the. He doesn't get as high with his punches. Like, he has to rely sometimes on the big heavy fist that splits the opponent's arms rather than actually hitting the ball, which is sort of old man tactics. But look, he got the job done, full credit. And his opponent for much of the game, Rice, actually got a Bronx cheer from Essendon supporters late in the game. So always a sign you're having a good day as a key back.
Yeah, and you know, the Peter Wright, look, the best thing you can say about Tarrant is that he reverted Peter Wright, who had been on a tear. He reverted him back to his same old disappointing self. So yeah, no, it was a good effort. We mentioned Gipkus as well. Like, he's again covering an injury pretty seamlessly, I thought, with the defensive structure.
Yeah, absolutely. He did very well. And Nick, I've gone off quoting pressure points as a measure because they become so predictable that Graham always dominates by a mile, and then you sort of get one of our other sort of pressure mids doing reasonably well in that. But this is pressure points. I know you haven't seen this because this isn't a measure in the sun. But since Graham wasn't playing, would you like to speculate at all who was leading? Who was sort of our top three or four players?
Maurice Rioli Jr.?
Well done. So he didn't win. So no, he was equal first, sorry.
Yeah.
Equal first, which, and just to put some context, it's very hard for a small forward. Small forwards almost never, you know, Graham is always number one for us, but very rare that you know, someone like George will be number two, because it's just not a role that lends it, that you don't play as inside as much. You're not round as many stoppages as a full-time mid. But Rioli, aside from his goals, he wasn't going to get dropped anyway because he kicked two goals, but there's no way, and he didn't get a touch in the last, so, you know, full context, not a perfect game. There's no way you get dropped in a Damien Hardwick team when you're putting on that much pressure as a forward.
No. So, well, and his level of confidence, like having watched a bit of him in the Northern Territory, like he is now feeling like he can try some of the things that he did when he was up in the territory, in terms of taking tackles on and ducking and weaving through traffic. Like, yeah, consistency is a challenge, and I think is going to always be a challenge at that position. So, yeah, and on such a big occasion as well. Like, he did a fair bit of pre-match media, but yeah, no, really, really encouraging effort, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, the hype train is not helpful. I know they do it to every team. It's currently happening to Jack Ginnivan, but you know, MJ is going to play 200 games. Like, well, you know, he was a pick in the 50s. But for pick in the 50s, he's doing bloody well in his second season. Pick in the 50s who didn't have the easiest junior pathway. So let's focus on that rather than the sort of the exaggerated hype at the moment. And he's doing really well. Now, so credit to Jaden Short as well, who continues to surprise and excite in his hybrid midfield role, and in sort of, by a lot of the metrics, having his most valuable season. So it's been fantastic to watch. Third was Bakes, who was, I think we haven't focused quite enough, but like, had an absolutely cracking game. And the 30 touches by the simple metrics, almost 500 metre gained. But like, by the advanced metrics, he had an amazing game, 6 tackles, 2. And so he was third on the pressure axe. But guess who was fourth? And still respectably high at a level that's, you know, higher than usual for a mid. Well, I'm going to take that silence as an eager anticipation. It was.
Ooh, sorry, I was guessing Camden.
No, Camden really does well on it just because of the role. Like, Camden's defensive work is really fat side cover, so it's the nature of the role.
No, I'm completely blanking.
It was Dustin Martin.
Oh, There we go. That shouldn't who sound so surprised.
Yeah, who else had five tackles, you know, by the old sort of more basic statistics. There's usually a pretty heavy correlation between pressure points and tackles. But yeah, even though Dusty was just okay offensively by his lofty standards.
By his standards, yeah.
He was doing what Dimmer loves to say with Bolton as well. Like he was doing a bit of work on the defensive side. So very rarely does Dustin Martin get praised for his defensive work, but it was fourth on the team in a relatively high number for the pressure points this week. So good on him.
No, that's good. Speaking of midfielders, I thought, you know, I've been increasingly convinced of Jack Ross in more of a outside midfielder role rather than a inside mid. But, you know, the key to playing in an outside role, you know, either you're an absolute physical beast on the wing, like Pickett or K-Mac, or you really you've got to create goal scoring chances when you get the ball. And I thought his disposal was pretty tidy, and he did well on score involvements. And yeah, I thought it was, you know, not the best opposition, but it was a pretty solid performance.
Yeah, it did some quite had a few decent turnovers too during the game. Was a sort of his first quarter. First quarter was 9 touches, and then he had 19 for the game. So it was sort of his good work was heavily front loaded. And it was funny as a good friend of ours said that asked whether it's was Jack Ross's best game. And if you actually go through Jack Ross's career, because there tend to be gaps in between them, I reckon Jack Ross has had 5 or 6 best games at Richmond. He's had quite a few games that you think, oh yeah, the light's really gone on, and yeah. So statistically, it may be his best game, but statistically, there's no evidence that it is. But
certainly is not his.
But I certainly get the sentiment, because I sort of, you know, I was interested enough in the idea that I researched it.
Yeah, I mean he had 25 disposals in his first game. Like he sort of, you know, he's that frustration of him showing this capacity, but for whatever reason, it hasn't quite all come together. Did you have anyone else you wanted to mention, or do you want to talk what comes out of selection?
Yeah, well, it's a natural transition into the VFL. So, George well, actually, Martin, I, by the way.
Oh, yeah. And George was good. For someone who didn't play well last week, he was good this week.
He's well above the sort of kills a small puppy on the ground level of bad play necessary for him to get dropped. So yeah, the Dimmer line, the George Dimmer line. Anyway,
he has his own handshake with Murphy Jr., which I enjoyed.
Yes, it's quite elaborate.
Yeah, good times. So Lynch and Lambert injured, unlikely to play. Jack Graham seems very likely to come back from his toe injury. Pickett's returning from suspension. Is that is selection as simple as that?
I will say with Pickett, you know, before my match praise, we said it on Twitter, the pre-match obviously was awesome. Mm. I didn't have a great, because I was sitting at the punt road end, you just see a line of people walking in. I wasn't, you know, and they block your view of it a little bit. So I wasn't that fired up for the presentation until I saw Pickett in the traditional paint. And I actually got a little bit emotional, and it annoyed me so much that he wasn't playing, you know, with his jumper. But you know, obviously it was a beautiful ceremony, which was great. He could participate in, and the club absolutely nailed it, as much discussed. But he's having a really good season. He's having him, you know, by the advanced metrics, he's having by far his best season, and he's a really significant in these days, particularly at the SCG when you're playing in a phone booth. And the suspension was ridiculous. And allow me to tangent since we're off the game briefly. You know, this week there's been one of the many weeks where people are complaining about the way that the game's been umpired this week. And look, Nick, I don't even think we can participate in this debate because I've got no idea what it's like to be a normal AFL supporter because I barrack for the team that has the statistically off the charts worst time with the umpires on free kicks and inside 50s. So how can we comment objectively on either of the modern rules because we're always on the arse end of it by so far? How is it that other teams infringe so less against us than they do on any other team? It's just amazing. Like, I get that maybe, you know, players like Nank give away more, but other teams magically stop tackling high when they're playing us. They stop infringing in the forward line. It's just amazing. So, look, as much as that's this week's content machine is how the game's been umpired, I feel I can't comment, Nick, because, you know, I watch too much Richmond because I watch two games of Richmond a week and one on replay, and it's colouring my opinion so much of how the game's been officiated. Anyway, rant over. Back to the game.
No, look, there's definitely issues when, you know, so like literally Dylan Grimes, who, you know, is a hard but fair footballer, just looks confused. And at some of those dangerous tackle calls, like, yeah, there's some, you know, it's a difficult game to umpire, but when you're mid-season and your experienced footballers don't know what the hell, because they'll play to wherever you draw the line, but if the line's indistinguishable, then how can you play? Yeah.
I also hate it, I'll wrap this up. The stand rule, okay, like it has a purpose, but if someone fakes a hand pass and you take a half step and that's 50, that's not the spirit of the stand rule. If a player takes a half step and then goes back, he hasn't violated the attacking principle that you're trying to achieve. It's just, he's just been faked out for a second. Like that's putting your umpires in a position where they can't use common sense, where they've created a rule that the way it's been officiated is like, no one wants to see a game or a critical moment in the game decided by this. So it's just, is not the umpire's fault. That is rule maker's fault.
It is frustrating. Well, is it, you know, having umpired a lot of lower level football, this isn't an issue at lower level football. This is only an issue at the top level where, because, you know, local footy people just go and you point them where the mark is and people go and stand there. Like they're not dropping back 15 metres at a 45 degree angle towards the corridor to cut off opportunities to pass the ball. So, there's a fair bit of blame that has to go to coaches for their defensive tactics that has made this necessary. But, yeah, the implementation of it is really hard. And I think you've got to abide by the principle of what's, you know, not rewarding that sort of dumb, tricky stuff rather than actually letting people run off.
It's quite an advantage. It's quite, it's not hard. Like, the spirit of what the rule's trying to achieve is not violated. Anyway, it's a tedious discussion. I apologise for taking us down there, but it does make me angry. It does continue to annoy me, and I hate it when I watch other teams play the 50 for taking a half step off the stand. But as discussed on Twitter, I'm still outraged that no major party decided to make that as a platform on the election campaign. So I continue to have no justice, no peace. Now, the one thing on selection I say, and I say this every week, God, I hate playing Jake Arts as a sub. It's just, we're an old team, and I would so much rather we get some youth in there, both for the benefit as I think you get, like, Arts was once again quite disappointing as a sub. He was fine, like, don't get me wrong, lovely hand pass, by the way, that led to a goal. And I do really admire him as a footballer, and I get the argument that what happens if he doesn't play, like, you've wasted a whole day for, you know, a whole week of development for some of these guys. But, like, I really, like, if Prestia does his calf in the second quarter against Sydney and we're bringing on Jake Arts, we're stuffed. And at least if you, like, you bring on RCD or Dow, which would have been my two preferences, pick your poison, but at least then you've got another a proper set of legs in the midfield that can rotate through, and also, you know, good experience for them both, and, you know, might get some confidence out of coming on fresh when others are tired. So that would be the, my other change.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I think, fortunately, in terms of replacing Lynch, it's quite hard to. There's not really a young tall who deserves a spot. Like, you know, Biggie's probably. Oh, although Miller played really well in the VFL, so, you know, maybe it's hard to say who'd be next one up. But yeah, it's hard to see either of them coming into the team.
Miller's go.
You know who's a dark horse from the VFL?
Are you going to say Cumberland?
Yeah, like if you're just wanting someone to kick goals, and you know Sydney Stack's also a pretty good choice here, but Cumberland has very consistently kicked goals in the VFL this season. Like he's not really much of a he's a bit of a marking target, but it's not a crazy idea, I don't think.
Oh, it's absolutely not. I mean, he's averaging more than two goals a game. He's done it consistently for over several seasons now. And you sort of, like, I'm very much Team Sydney Stack. Like, a lot of Richmond supporters love to have him in the team, particularly the SCG, where, you know, his cleverness and his ability to find, do the special trick in relatively confined spaces. It seems like the SCG would be really well suited to him, but, like, in some ways, like, rewarding performance. Like, this is a natural day to give Noah a go.
Yeah, no, I agree.
It's just, you've really got to bring Graham and Pickett in. So that's, you're running out of options about
absolutely.
What you can do if Graham's fit. So, yeah. But look good on him, he keeps scoring. But since we're sort of naturally transitioning to the VFL, and, you know, as you mentioned, Stack had three, looked creative. Maybe Stack would be a choice for a sub. Also, it doesn't solve your midfield problem, but someone gets injured, but at least, you know, he will give you an injection of skill. The person who's really on his confidence juice is the before-mentioned Ben Miller.
Yeah, no, playing really well. You know, clunking the ball and disposing of it pretty confidently as well, which is good to see. We'd be amiss to not talk about how well Hugo Ralph Smith. Like he probably deserves it. You know, for a guy who got injured in the seniors, and he's come back the last 2 weeks and just done nothing but win the football. Drive the ball inside 50 and just showed a lot of dash. So yeah, I think absolutely he comes into the bigger squad. Maybe an SCG game doesn't suit him as much, given, you know, as you said, it playing in the phone book. But yeah, he's playing really well.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Nick, you actually, I believe you didn't mention it on the show, but you talked to me afterwards about that you wanted to talk about D'Ambrosio. And you've been saving it for this week, and then he went out and got 25 touches in the VFL. So,
Massimo D'Ambrosio. So he's a sort of halfback midfielder from Point Cook via the Western Giants, and yeah, he's played a couple. So didn't get drafted last year. He's come back this year. Playing NAB League for the Western Jets, but he's played a couple of games for us in the VFL, and every time he plays for us, he does not stop winning the football. He's short and not the most athletic player as a defender, which is maybe part of the reason why he didn't get drafted. But God, he's had 25 disposals this week, and he's coming up very regularly in discussions of possible mid-season draft picks, which is next week. And I think, yeah, there's he would be absolutely, I think, in the frame for us. Although, you know, take with a big grain of salt, mid-season draft pick gossip, because you know it is a fairly shallow pool. But having last year had Sam Durham drafted by Essendon out of our VFL program, and he's played some decent, if not great, senior footy for them. Yeah, I'd be annoyed if we had someone drafted out of our VFL program again. That wasn't once again. By us.
Yes. it does seem to be a nasty habit. He did look, the eye test really, really did flatter him. I thought he looked like a young listed player.
Yeah. Judson Clark's goal was pretty outrageous. It's on the club website, but yeah, the confidence to get a handball received just with a chasing opponent on your heels, and then to accelerate away, take a bounce, and slot the goal. It was pretty nice.
The other thing I noticed is the fact that hand pass was given. Like, yeah. I can't remember who gave it to him, but it was watching it live.
Sydney Stack, I think.
Oh yeah. Oh, okay. And that would explain it, right? But I thought, oh, that's a slightly unusual hand pass, and then the player exploded off, and then eventually I realized it was Clark, and it made sense. But you know, the team, it is that speed is that it changes the game, because your teammates know you can do things that other people can't. So yeah, it was a really look. It's hard right now with MJ playing so well, but yeah, there's sort of the case for the Judson Clark debut. And yes, I know he's tiny and ringing wet, but he can do things that. Speed is speed is speed, and it can do things other players can't. That's it for me for the VFL, Nick.
Look, the only other one I wanted to mention, Tom Brown had a pretty good game. So he's probably the only one of the draftees who's really struggled a bit at times. But no, he had a genuinely good game, so which I was pleased to see.
Now, I will say, just to put to put a level on the low grade hype that we've, it's pretty niche hype, but you know, we've been recognizing Samson Ryan's been playing much better than the last few weeks. He did get beaten by, he did kick a nice goal, to his credit, three shots and goal, but he did get beaten in the rucks by Phillips moderately badly.
Andrew Phillips, noted AFL journeyman.
Yes, many years ago appeared on this podcast about an anecdote about Kevin Sheetey coaching him at the Ainslie Football Club.
Several football.
I'm sure
teams ago.
I don't know enough about the VFL to know how we reached the galaxy brain outcome of having Riley Collier Dawkins rucking, but yes, it was. It went about as well as you'd expect.
Well, the backup had a torn ACL last week, so that'll partly do it. One of the backups.
But you could have shuffled things around so he didn't have to do it. But that's how they do it. So fine.
No, you know. I know. Look, just before we talk some more about Sydney, the little bit of news last night. Both Shea Bolton and Dan Rioli have changed management from Ralph Carr, which I think, you know, can only be a positive, frankly. The Rioli's joined a Melbourne-based agency, Capital Sports. But probably certainly the more interesting one is Shea joining Anthony van der Wielen, who people have read Marlon Pickett's book. Yeah, I mean, he's got quite a few clients as an agent, but he's very deeply connected with South Fremantle, and he did a lot of work trying to get AFL clubs interested in Marlon, and we worked with him sort of before and after drafting and since, and you know, they also worked with him bringing Matty Parker over. So, yeah, this is someone, you know, we've had a really good relationship with, and yeah, discussions on a contract extension have already started. So yes, please, that is definitely a positive step forward for me. A news of a long and lucrative Shea Bolton extension would, I'd love it. You know, he's clearly on a very short list of essential Richmond players for the next phase of the club.
Yes, agree. Look, we at this podcast like nothing better than dunking on Ralph Carr, but I will just say, to his credit, as much as, you know, publicly it's a disaster, I'm not actually sure sometimes that we don't get the better deal with some of his clients. So it's not, I wouldn't say it's 100% a positive. We might have to pay a bit for some of this, but the sort of the professionalism, and I think it's probably unambiguously a good thing for these players between us, well, and the listeners obviously, but yeah, something's happened there, because that's two players moving at once, that's a thing, and it's something that, without knowing the inside, I can totally see why people might have advised them. You know, it's just common sense, right, that you go with an agent who's had more experience, a bit more vanilla, that the average fan hasn't heard of. That would be,
well, but for Shea particularly, like Van der Whelen's got really deep links at South Fremantle, where so he would have known him for like since his mid-teens. So yeah.
Yeah, and like as discussed before, I think we were the big beneficiaries in Shea's last contract. Like the length of it is really strange. And
yeah, well, that's true. One, yeah, that it goes 1 year short of free agency. Sydney, they have a literally identical record to us. 6-4, percentage of 120. SCG form is okay. Good win versus the Cats. Couple of disappointing losses to the Queensland teams. I tried to look at what our SCG form was like, because obviously, you know, we all remember fondly playing there in 2015, but we haven't played there since 2016.
Which is a very unfond memory.
Yeah, which is a very unfond memory. And look, generally, we've only won there twice this century, but we haven't played there all often. So, yeah, I didn't... the smaller grounds, I feel like, often haven't suited us. Particularly our small forwards getting any sort of space to create. But yeah, I feel this is going to be an unusual challenge for us.
Yeah, and we're not quite our grandparents Richmond either in 2007, the sort of 2017. We don't have quite as many small forwards as we want, ultra quick burning small forwards as we once did. And I don't think I think what makes Morris good is not necessarily going to be affected that much by the size of the ground. So yeah, look, it's really interesting. The Swans are a fascinating team. I sort of have an impression of them perhaps being better than they actually are because of how easily they handled us last year. And I was very nervously looking. Papley, who you might recall kicked 4 against us last time, has actually, he missed the start of the season and has been slowly, perfectly building into form. He had one goal 3 weeks ago. He's had 1, 2, and 3 goals in the last 3 games. So he's building into form. Mills is obviously their star, doing reasonably well in the coaches' votes. But, you know, relative to anyone else on their team, he's by far the best rated player by sort of any measure that you want to use. The clearances, they're okay. in the center clearances. They're sort of, I think they were about eighth in total clearances last in four innings games, whereas we're 13th. While Nankdo is playing well, this is the big challenge for Nankdo, is that we've really stabilized that as an area, which is a massive weakness at the start of the year. Cost us basically the Carlton and Saints game. We stabilized that partly through the return of Prestia, partly through having dominant rucks against some fairly mediocre rucking divisions. As you've already pointed out, the Swans were probably in our weight class.
Hickey and Laddams are definitely good.
Yeah, so like it'll be a really interesting game for that reason. If Prestia is fit, you know, we're underdogs, but actually if you were to tell me now that Prestia will play the full game, which I guess there's no guarantee that he will, so you have to factor that in the odds, I would say that we're favourites, because the Swans don't have that many outstanding players. Franklin, I think, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to mention opportunity before, I think there's an issue with Buddy, and great at the game, fantastic. Football is better for having Buddy Franklin in it. Kicked an amazing goal again.
He's kicked 23 goals. Yeah, he's been good.
Yeah, like we all respect him. But, you know, just watching the eye test, which the stats don't capture, he does get a lot of opportunity for his not that many goals. Like, I'm not sure how much of a big...
They do. Yeah, it's... Look, I think it's a bit of a moot point, but if... Luke McDonald was a year or two older. You know, there might be a question about is it good for his development? You know, is it time to move Buddy Franklin to the wing? Discussion.
Yeah, I just don't. He's not. All I'm saying, he's no longer, and the ratings don't support it either. He's no longer a top line player. It's still fun to watch, but he's not someone obvious, I worry about.
No. It'll be fascinating who we play Gibcus on in terms of who's got do you match up Tarrant on Buddy who's maybe got a bit too much toe for him, or I do like the symmetry of Gibcus doing his young Alex Rance impersonation on a player who Rance had any number of classic battles against.
I do like that too. And just the young buck versus the old buck.
Young legs, old legs, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, no, I like that idea. And I don't know, like, sort of, yeah, but, I mean, on the other hand, you know, Buddy doesn't use his height that much anymore, so... You know, Grimes might make perfect sense as well, because the worst one I think is Tarrant, who may wind up doing the job. So, you know, I think you can make a case for all three of them, but will be interesting. Yeah. But I think your idea is definitely the most fun.
Yeah, they're good at generating marks inside 50. Like Papley's very sneaky. Isaac Heaney goes forward. We mentioned Franklin and McDonald. Yeah, that is a strength. Interesting. We've talked before about the Swans, their reputation as a contested ball team probably has been better than reality for a while, but they're actually a really good defensive team. They're good.
Yep.
Maybe the SCG is helping with this, but they're good at denying teams space, time and space to execute. So, you know, they're literally first in the AFL in terms of their opposition winning uncontested ball. So, yeah, that's going to be a real challenge for us in getting fluidity in our game. But, I mean, there is, you know, talking about playing in a phone box, there is, I think, there's a challenge for us. You know, when you look at Sydney, particularly... Having so many of these gun academy players, you know, Callum Mills, Isaac Heaney, Blakey, Gildon, you know, because you're looking at someone like Blakey, who would have never picked up an AFL ball in his life, if not for the Swans Academy, that you're hoping that if you put them under pressure, like, you know, that their skills are going to panic or they're going to roll the ball backwards between their legs. You know, you're just really hoping to dial up the heat in that regard.
All right, Nick, I've ranted too long about the stand rule, talked about overanalyzed Soldo, and now you've complained about the Sydney Academy. So I think we've done the Richmond Tiger Talk trifecta of
the golden trifecta.
So at 55 minutes, I think that's a pretty good podcast. And I'm really looking forward to this game. I think I say this every week, but important to take the joy in football. But I'm really looking forward to this game. It's a really interesting test, and SCG is a beautiful ground. Unfortunately, it's on the same night as a cracking craft beer festival in Melbourne. So it's a bit of a what do I prioritise? But
oh, no. We'll work out. Oh, hipsters lament.
Indeed.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
It starts with a vision. If we're not locked into that, might as well pack up and go home.
You're talking about three flags by 2020. Fitzroy has played more finals than you guys.
And after 13 straight losses, the Tigers are no longer toothless. Their first win for 2010. Carmichael Hunt. Look at Jeffrey. He does. Carlton are on their way to Sydney.
West on to kick a goal from here. He does. What a start. Can he just slow? He's gone. No free kick, surely.
In the final home and away game of the season, obliterating the Tigers by 113 points.
First preliminary final in 16 long years, and they have done it. They've won. The Tigers are into the prelim.
Go Tigers.